This episode of East Meets West is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/east. Welcome to East Meets West, episode 276. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And it looks like Colleen joined us right as we were getting started. Hey, Colleen.
Except that she's all green, so she must be using some sort of night vision mode.
It's entirely possible. Actually, no, this is just my home.
Your home is green?
Yeah, I have like LEDs.
Android and green. Stuff.
Well, no, I can. If you want it to be red, it can be red, or it can be purple or orange.
Oh, so it's not Android green.
Can be any color you want. Watch.
Did you happen to watch the State of the Union address, Colleen?
No, I didn't. I was too busy playing with my
life. I see the red now.
Hey, it kind of reminds me of Otter Pops. For those who are not viewing right now, Colleen just went around to the back of her TV and kind of rainbowed out the color.
It's like a light switch rave party.
Of one.
Yes. Party, but aren't they all?
And you're drinking milk?
No, it's coffee with an exceptional amount of milk in it.
Ah, okay. I gotcha.
Out of a beaker. it's really just milk with a touch of coffee.
Basically, yeah. About a 50-50 ratio.
Roger had the State of the Union address on, but it made him sick.
No, it did make me sick. Well, I was already sick.
Okay.
So, however, it did nothing to cure it. It was actually very interesting. I mean, it is what all State of the Union speeches are. It's designed to set out the plan, the vision of the administration for what remaining time they have left, but also kind of to reinforce and to give a semblance of control and confidence, like to kind of reassure the population, like the man you voted for office knows what he's doing and he's going to do it somehow.
The main plan, I swear.
What's that?
What?
Is it, I have a plan, I'll swear it?
Pretty much.
Kind of, yeah.
Pretty much every president's State of the Union address is that. I liked his, all the presidents in the last 20 years try to get a nice joke in at some point. And
Don't go, is it the milk one?
Yeah, President Obama was talking about repealing old laws that, or executive orders that are no, or regulations. So is it old regulations that don't apply anymore
or don't make sense?
And he mentioned one about from the 1940s that classified milk as an oil and required that all dairy farmers be able to show that they can contain a milk spill, and that, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
he said that really was crying over spilt milk.
This is an instance where I don't mind crying over spilled milk.
Oh, that's just bad.
What stood out to me the most was the one on education, and his kind of stance on allowing schools flexibility. To kind of set, which is kind of weird because, of course, we all know education in the United States is set by the state, not by the federal government, state governments.
For now.
Well, until such time that there is some sort of bill passed and it's voted into law to change that. But in kind of a workaround way, like you don't teach to the test, like where we give the teachers the resources where they can teach creatively and effectively, and they don't have to teach to the test. But he also followed that up with, but also get rid of teachers that aren't doing, you know, that aren't teaching well or doing our kids any good. It was very interesting because he kind of wedged it right in there, right after that. And you can kind of, you almost hear a pause in the audience, like, what did he say? And then the same thing about, you know, basically weaning the U.S. off foreign energy sources and, you know, of course, all the things about alternative energies, energy resources. But he also said expanding the U.S.'s ability to mine or drill for petroleum and gas, oil and gas in locations previously not open up to it.
No, he said he was going to open 75% of the available offshore drilling.
Which wasn't that wasn't there originally. Weren't those not available?
The previous he's opening 75% of the previously unavailable areas for drilling, including offshore.
And what's most telling is what had been one round of applause after another got really quiet right when he said that. It's like clap clap clap.
Well, because the Republicans don't want to clap for that because they don't trust it, and the Democrats don't want to clap for that because they're against it.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was very awkward, but it was very awkward. It was very interesting. I liked it. Those are the two standout moments that I could recall from lying in my bed with a mild fever.
I actually liked the gambit of saying anybody who tells you that America is in decline doesn't know what they're talking about, because essentially the Republican campaign in the primaries has all been talking about how poorly the United States is doing and how I, as your candidate, will pull us out of our decline. So it's an interesting political gambit that worked very well for Ronald Reagan in 1984, which was it's morning in America again. You know, we're back on our feet. I think
the shining city on the hill.
I think President Obama is trying a variation of that strategy to say, hey, America's economy is recovering. He's banking that it's going to continue to recover into the fall. And he can say, I took over the country when it was at its bottom. You know, the bottom had just fallen out of the economy, and we've built it back up. Don't stop now. That seems to be his strategy, which is interesting, because it's a hard one to combat, to come out and go, well, no, America actually is bad, because then you look like you're unpatriotic.
Well, it looks like you're unpatriotic, and also, like, you know, what have you been doing for the past 3 years?
Yeah, but it's also a fair thing, because people are going to sit around and say, well, why do things suck so much? And one could make the counter argument. It's like, well, compared to where we were when the last president left office, we're doing quite well, actually. And I'm happy with the progress.
Well, and that was the key thing that worked for Reagan, was to say, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? He did it both elections. Yeah. He said it with Carter when the answer was definitely no. And he said it against Mondale when the answer was, in fact, yes, I am, because in 1984, the country was better off economically. I'm not sure that President Obama can use that.
I would say he could.
Yeah. It's really interesting, because 2012, other than being the year of the dragon, for anyone in interested in Chinese.
Why is that relevant?
Gung Hai Fa Chao.
Well, it's because it's supposed to be very an auspicious year.
Oh, why do you got to be like that? What do you got against, like, goats?
In any case, 2012 will be very interesting, because, you know, there is a marked shift in the global economy toward a slowdown, not just for the U.S., but for Europe,
actually,
South America.
Actually, the U.S. is the outlier there. The United States is growing. It's actually fighting the trend. It's not necessarily a global – it's not a global trend yet, Roger. It's a trend in Europe. Europe's in recession. Declared in recession soon. The rest of the world economy is okay, but it's under threat that the European recession will pull it back down.
Well, I mean, it depends on how you see it. I mean, already there are reports that are revising forecasts for China to now. This is not to say that China
will have
lower growth has a knockoff effect on the countries that feed into the Chinese production chain, resources, material, energy. So, I mean, the world is a globalized economy, whether or not you want to admit to it. And things that happen on one end of the planet actually do affect other parts of it. There's no such kind of thing where insulated or isolated. You're not.
Nobody's arguing with you on that. It's just the fact
arguing,
is right
Tom?
Now only Europe is experiencing a recession. The rest of the global economy is actually doing quite well. I think what you're trying to say is that can't last with Europe in the straits that it's in.
Well, no. I mean, there is a market. There's a markedly slower growth and different. This is not to say that there's negative growth, that there are those countries or other countries
the
are
United
falling.
The United States is actually growing faster too.
Well, it's not falling recession, but you do have a number of countries, including Brazil, Australia, and Canada, that are looking at revised, lowered economic prospects for 2012 compared to 2011 and 2010. So it's, you know.
But the United States is actually doing better than it has.
It's doing better relative to where it was.
Right.
And so I mean.
And so how does that translate for people, though? People are better off than they were 4 years ago.
Well, it depends on who you are. I mean, again, I mean, it's
if you're a hedge fund,
I don't want to be a cynic, but it's very much it's still very much a glass is half empty or half full kind of situation.
But you're Roger. That's your job, right?
It's not my job. It's just how I was born, which is
maybe you were
say.
Born that way. Is that what you're saying?
What do you have to, Tom? You know me better than that. Or dude, or maybe you don't.
It doesn't matter whether it's a choice or not. You don't have to.
So in any case, you know, I did this year is still early. So there is still what, eight, nine months?
I actually don't think the effects of Europe and even a slower growing China are going to be felt in the United States very severely by election time. They may or may not. I think that's a less interesting question to me than this question of do people feel as if they're better off than they were 4 years ago. In 1984, it was very clearly better. It's a little more murkier. There's a lot of people still without jobs. There's a lot of people who are not worse off, but they aren't necessarily better off. I just think it's a less clear-cut situation. I think there's plenty of people who can say, yes, I'm better off. I think there's actually a lot of people who can say, no, I'm not better off.
It's powerful of a
piece of rhetoric.
I mean, you know, I could say, for example, my parents' instance, they're probably not better off than they were 4 years ago. I mean, at least especially in California.
True, a sample size of two. That's impressive.
Well, compared to your sample size of.
Let's start measuring each other's sample size.
Oh, you should talk, Tom. But I mean, at least in California, property prices are still falling. So I mean, until that hits bottom at some point and you get the dead cat bounce back up, you know, for some people it still hurts. And whether or not they'll still be hurting by election time, I think is what Tom is hitting upon. You know, are those people discouraged enough? Or are they you know that much of a mood to vote against? Or
so the question is, do they feel better off is different than are they better off?
Well, I mean, it's whether, I mean, a lot of this is perception, right?
Yeah, and that's a very fair point.
You know, for someone who used to own, well, not me, but just say, for example, someone used to own a large home, had three cars, a boat and stuff, and suddenly down to a more modest home and a couple of cars, they're still able to feed their family and everything else, but they feel less rich because they don't have all the toys. They don't have that, you know, quote unquote wealth
to judge themselves by.
Well, you know, a lot of people, there's that wealth effect. You know, if you own, say you own your home, Colleen, and someone told you it's worth $1 million right now, you say, hey, I'm doing pretty well. If say within a 1 month time, someone told you, you know what, your house is worth only $500,000 because of the recession, even though your spending habits or anything hasn't really changed, you'll kind of feel poor, even though nothing's really changed, you know, realistically for you in that time frame, other than someone told you your net worth has dipped. So you might feel less poor, and you might be a little less open to spending cash on things like Blu-rays, you know, new gadgets, maybe a car or anything. You're probably more inclined to hold on to your cash and not spend as much.
Hold that thought. We have to thank our sponsor, Audible. This podcast brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Listeners of this podcast, East Meets West, get a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook that I've been listening to, Roger, is Rule 34 by Charles Stross.
Wow, sounds interesting. What is the rule about?
You know what Rule 34 is, don't you?
Vaguely.
If it exists, there is porn of it.
That's right. And the book takes place in the not-too-distant future in which there is an entire Scottish police regiment devoted to investigating all of the porn that is based on all of the things that can happen and on the internet. So if you're into not too distant future kind of projected science fiction, Cory Doctorow-ish, check it out. You can get the audiobook for free, or any audiobook you want for free, at audiblepodcast.com/east. That's audiblepodcast.com/east. We thank Audible for their support of East Meets West.
Thank you.
And we don't hear reports every single day of how many people were just laid off at X and Y and Z company. Yeah,
because they're already laid off. Ha! The deleveraging has already begun. We're a third of the way through, if you believe some economists. Yeah, I would actually like to get a person who has a little more insight onto that. And the reason why I bring this, I'm saying that, is because I was reading a New York Times article on why, you know, Apple cannot produce the iPhone in the U.S. And one of the statements they said was they couldn't find enough engineers, someone who had graduated high school with kind of an engineering major, but not a bachelor's degree. In other words, they wanted someone cheap enough that they could afford to keep on set. Yeah, and it's like a temp worker, a contract worker, making less.
But I did hear, like, in my car, part of the State of the Union, when I was, like, switching, getting in my car, turning it on before I turned it off. and they were talking about that they wanted immigration reform, and that, well, they being the president, he said, you know, one of the problems is people come to our country and are studying and getting degrees in business and engineering, and then we kick them out.
Well, it's interesting because yeah, I mean, for the most part, he's right. I mean, unless you get a job, well, it changes somewhat if you get a job after school in your career.
Yeah, but that's actually kind of hard.
It is. It's very difficult. And
I would be supportive of us having a policy that specifically tries to encourage immigration of people with skill sets that we want.
Well, it's
The Russians did the same thing.
But most of them were Germans, and most of them were taken by the military. Well, what's interesting is, like, I think
Germans.
Yeah.
It's the standard operating procedure when you want to build rockets. You just import Germans.
Well, it's, you know, it's one of the things is the immigration debate up till now has been entirely dominated on illegal immigration and solely from Mexico, Central America.
That's because hate is going to hate.
Would you just let me finish? What I'm just kind of discouraged by is the lack of talk about actually overhauling our current immigration system, because as it is one of the most illogical Byzantine systems on the planet. I have a friend who is on a work visa, and every time her visa's up, she needs to re-interview with the U.S. consulate in order to get her visa renewed. But you can't do it in the U.S. where she lives. No, you have to do it from a third country. So she actually has to fly to Canada, to Alberta, Calgary, and literally stay there like half a week, you know, already making the appointment, and then go to the U.S. consulate in Calgary to do the interview there. They approve the visa, and then she flies back. Makes no freaking sense. Why would you do that? Why would you? One of my bugbears with the system is it's so expensive to legally immigrate into the U.S. Lawyers, the kind of runaround that you get where, for example, if I were to marry someone from a different country, and this is only recent, I think, something implemented in the past 10 years, and if they were going to be my spouse, they would first actually have to go back to their home country, go to American consulate embassy over there and interview there. And then once that's done, you have to give them all this paperwork. It takes about a year. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, if there was some sort of criminal background, I understand. But if you actually expedite the process, you can clear out the negative ones as well as intake the positive ones. Yeah, you think they're sleeper agents. They can sleep as long as they want.
And
they can wait out the process.
People around that are smart to catch them. Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's so counterintuitive. Well, you want to make it difficult for people to get in. It's like, what you want to do is create a system that automatically ejects the non-desirables and retains the desirable ones quickly. Because the longer it takes, the more cases you have of people automatically kind of going underground and disappearing into the system. Sure. Or under the radar. If you make it quick, they don't have time to do that, and you can automatically identify them before they become an issue on U.S. soil.
Apparently can't train our own people, but we won't give the jobs to anyone else, and so we're just sitting there with open jobs, and meanwhile,
they get outsourced.
We're staffing up our competition. We're staffing up other countries with highly trained people that we taught.
It's incredibly... It's I think, you know, I'm all for higher education. I'm wondering if creating a technical outlet, technical school,
yes,
as a secondary education outlet, rather than a standard four-year, you know, bachelor's degree, is maybe the way to go.
But don't stop there.
I mean, it's
Maybe. I mean, I think that would help encourage domestic study and training in the jobs.
I think part of it is. I've talked to a number of people that are in the age group of, you know, 20 to 28 who are, you know, in this mist of trying to find work, and Colleen included. And, you know, for some of the people who are not as financially well off, one of the things is like, I cannot continue school because it's prohibitively, it's just really expensive. It's not only just the monetary thing, it's just the time you need to take out. Time you need to take off work and so many other things, so I think it might be more accessible.
There's
might be more
program built into it that pays. Yes.
Oh, continue.
So I'm of the opinion that we shouldn't force everyone into this archaic concept that we'll go and we'll teach you Shakespeare and sociology and general education. It's just I think the default should be that most people should be saying, all right, I'm interested in this career path. And for the first, you know, year or so, they're taught some fundamentals and foundation. And then after that, a key component of their education is being placed in an internship. Sorry, not an internship, an apprenticeship, where yes, they're going to school some days or some hours and then working other hours. And then after there, they have real world skills and they've been making money to help subsidize it. And then they can go off and do interesting things. Yeah.
And it's something we used to do. I mean, I remember the point in time in California when there was a major shift toward making sure everyone from high school went into a four-year program afterwards. And I remember a couple of my teachers, my science teacher being one of them, and said, like, that is one of the most pig-headed ideas ever. Not everyone needs or wants that type of education. And what you're doing is removing a lot of what you were referring to, Colleen, this kind of this apprenticeship technical training, because for a lot of people it was kind of sneered at. It's like, that's not real education. But, you know, a lot of electrical engineers started out that way.
Although, and, I mean, I definitely agree with a lot of what you guys are saying, which is it's not right what we have for everyone. Well, the educational opportunities we have available are not right for everyone. It becomes sort of a, well, you have to go in this university system eventually. But I also fear vocational education too widespread that doesn't, I mean, having a well-rounded education has unintended benefits. Knowing Shakespeare, knowing philosophy, knowing critical thinking, knowing things outside of your main discipline is very important to being able to think about things creatively and to live as a, you know, substantial contributor to society. I think we've actually eroded a lot of the benefits of that in this country because we cheap on it, especially in high school, but also at the university level. And so I worry about if we actually did go to very vocational oriented schools and you get nothing else, that our overall critical thinking, which we rail about on East Meets West all the time, would actually start going down even further, and we'd have more ill-informed people unable to make decisions in the electorate because they don't have a well-rounded education. So I'm not sure how to solve it because I'm totally sympathetic with this idea of you shouldn't have to be forced to pay for this wide-ranging liberal arts education when you know what you want to do. I mean, I think there's a very good argument for that as well.
I agree with you, and I'm not saying it's one or the other. I think there needs to be both. I think there's room for both. I just don't think that single tracking into one specific system and that's all you have is beneficial to not only to the economy but to the community as well.
Yeah, while you're making money.
Yeah, and one of the other things I'm kind of annoyed at is that, you know, everyone, you know, when, especially when you talk to, seniors or juniors in high school, all the colleges they list off, I mean, they're really nice. It's Harvard, it's Yale, it's UC this, UC that, really nice schools, UT. There are plenty of other schools that are just as good, maybe not of the level or at least the caliber or the reputation of certain, but, you know, state schools in California are actually really, really good, be it Cal Poly, SF State, San Jose State. I mean, they're not.
Whoa. I went to San Jose State. You can take that right off the list.
Okay. San Jose State is off the list.
So people should be aspiring to go to less desirable schools? I mean,
no, San Jose State should be aspiring to be better.
Well, no, I'm saying to Roger, like, why?
I'm sorry.
Why is it a problem for people to aspire to good schools?
I'm not saying that.
Usually people are taught. What I find is when I talk to people who are seniors or juniors in high school, they're telling me about the schools they think they can get into. And people should be trying to get into the best school they can.
I think that, you know, it's, I'm kind of split on that. On one hand, I understand.
People should try to get into schools that aren't very good.
There are only so many top tier schools that offer some sort of financial aid package that will accommodate most students, but there's just not enough places. One, two, most students actually aren't of that caliber anyway. And three, I think a lot of these other universities would be better off.
I think people end up going to those universities because they can't get into those other
schools. Most people seem to end up at University of Phoenix, paying out the nose for
a questionable.
I don't
think most people end up at the University of Phoenix. That seems to be an exaggeration.
You think so? There was a great what's the one on PBS? Starts with Frontline on the perils of secondary education education for profit schools. And they're actually
there's a peril to them, but that doesn't mean that the large majority of graduating high school students end up at the University of Phoenix.
Oh no, not all at all that, but I'm saying
you said most.
Tom. Yes, all of them end up at the University of Phoenix, Tom.
You said most.
And they all come.
And
all
I said large majority. Those are interchangeable. No one said all.
But let's ask another question. Is it the education system, or is it the students? Is it that we've, you know, got an entitled generation that doesn't feel, not just generation, but we've got entitled people who feel they don't have to work their ass off for stuff?
I've worked with people out of MIT that seem to be totally devoid of any common sense.
Oh, yes.
Or any real effective ability in a work environment. They might be incredibly good at testing, and they might be incredibly good at the classes that they take. But when it comes to the job, they're dysfunctional. It's like they can't focus or prioritize things in a reasonable manner for their job.
Younger generation has been a problem ever since I can remember.
They never work hard.
They never are able to play by the rules that I had to play by when I was a kid.
But I've also found
all this crap about entitled generations as the same thing we've been hearing for eternity from the older generation.
You're one of the most entitled.
The younger
people,
generation,
Tom,
doesn't behave the same way, doesn't have the same values. There are idiots in every generation, and there are hard workers in every generation.
That's true.
But that doesn't mean that the reason why American students may be losing out to students from other countries is not that American students.
I think it has to do with
the fact that we have a crappy educational system at the secondary level.
Well, I also think just socially, I mean, people don't want to take the hard classes. People don't want to take the hard science classes.
Science classes?
You mean like, you know, the stuff you need for.
They don't make you take them.
No. That's what I'm saying. Kids that. When they go into, they will opt for, and this is totally based on
all
my
kids have always opted for the easiest solution if they were allowed to take it.
Yes, exactly. So
it's is that a failing of the students, or is that just kids being kids?
Well, at some point, I mean, when those kids come out with a 4-year liberal arts degree instead of an engineering, science, hard science major, yeah, it does become an issue because now we have a situation where we don't have enough qualified engineers to fill those jobs.
No. But you're talking about college, and I think that is a different argument. I'm saying in secondary school, we are failing children. If we had better secondary education, better primary education, we would have different problems at the university level. But because we have such a crappy educational system up until that point, that causes a lot of problems before you even get to college.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to define. I mean, like, what do you consider to be a crappy school? What do you consider to be a good school? Is it based solely on test scores and college entrance exams?
No, that's a fair point. How to evaluate what a good school is.
I'm not arguing with you, but I'm trying to figure out.
That's why I'm agreeing. That's why I'm granting you a fair
point. Well, it's a metric that everyone, you know, everyone talks about it, but no one has a real way to define it. Like, you know, if you come out with a school, you know, fluent in four languages, is that a good high school?
Well, let's wrap this up because we're out of time.
Okay.
By saying that I believe there is a way to define what is a good education.
How very vague of you.
Well, it's not vague. you're implying that there is no way of ever identifying whether a school is good or not. And I don't think you mean to do that, but that's where you're leaving it. No one could ever judge whether a school is good or not.
Well, it's like saying who's the best athlete, the football player,
So you really think there's no way of ever judging whether a school is effective or not?
I'm saying that at some point we need to.
I think it's a longer discussion to decide the best way to do that, but I think it's achievable. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay. We'll see, Mr. Merritt. We'll see.
All right. Colleen, thanks for hanging out.
Was that me you were talking to? Sorry.
Yes, I said Colleen, thanks for hanging out.
I apologize. Excellent. I'm very glad to be here. You guys are very precious.
I need to swing by Google. You have to show me around the campus. I want the free – you guys still give the free nature juices at the front?
Of course we do, but they're only in the front. They're not in the little kitchens. You have to remember to go actually to the lobby to get them.
Mm. That's the only reason to go. It's the free nature juices and the visit.
Whatever
Colleen.
It takes. Anything to see you, Roger.
Yay! Nature juices, here I come.
There you go. If you want Roger Chang to come by your house, give out free nature juices.
In your lobby.
In your lobby of your house.
Or is it naked juice? That's one of those.
Either way.
It's delicious.
Subbrilliant.com/EMW is the place to find us online. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
About this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.